Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. You heard the voice there of Chris Bryant. And then the uni twice, two unis out of the professor, Kyle Hendricks, talking about you, Darvish.
And their cubicles are next to each other. And
you said the word uni twice.
Yes.
All right. For uniform.
That's it. Didn't go
when your mind is that far. When your mind reaches far and wide, you have to kind of abbreviate a couple of words because you've got so many thoughts.
When you're an Ivy League guy, do you have to just use that to make people think you're a regular Joe at some point?
He doesn't want to confuse anybody. Yeah. He's just got to dumb it down a bit.
But you know,
wrong with Yu's knee?
Don't start.
Sorry.
I forgot that those two shared cross paths in the Rangers organization. And so their cubicles are together. And according to Kyle, use English, even though we haven't seen it publicly, he is making a concerted effort to make all his conversations with teammates in English. And he said that's gone a long way to make him bond with his teammates immediately with the Cubs. And that it's much improved as to what it was when he was in Texas, when Kyle was in Texas. So at some point, I think we're going to see Yu Darvish start telling the interpreter, I got this. And because, again, yesterday, lost in translation.
Well,
sarcastic?
Yeah.
About, yeah, I lost 15 pounds because I was so bad in the World Series. Some people took that as
I think everyone,
as a heart
everyone
attack.
Ran with it.
And Sully said, no, that the guy is really sarcastic and really enjoys being sarcastic. And that's what he was doing there.
I think that's absolutely hilarious because it is lost in translation. Sarcasm of all the things.
Sure, it's tone.
Of course. And it is very funny that he was making a joke and everyone took it as, does he have 15 pounds to lose?
Yeah.
Let's start with that.
That's 6'5".
He's a 6'5" kind of, stick man. It's not like there's a lot of excess weight on his body. And the idea that, like, the stress of it to just sort of mention, well, I failed, so I had this horrible, panic attack stress, and I ended up losing 15 pounds.
And went all Kevin Love on himself.
I saw Pedro Gonzalez reporting it, like, you so upset by the, really?
Yeah.
And that apparently wasn't the case, but, what did you say? He went all what?
Kevin Love, did you hear about this panic attack?
I did. I saw that story. I got to tell you, I think it's good that people talk about things like that. And Kevin Love, if you haven't seen it, it's on the Players Tribune. He talks about during a game earlier in the year, they had to call it. They called a timeout, and he had a panic attack, and he physically couldn't go back onto the court, and he ended up going into the training room, and the trainers came with him, and they took him to the hospital.
He was on the floor.
It was a panic attack, and he didn't know what was going on. And man, I'll tell you, it's scary stuff when you hear about it in that fashion.
Well, he said he was inspired by DeMar DeRozan talking about dealing with depression.
Yeah.
And again, you're looking at these young guys, physical specimens, millionaires. Seems like life is, you couldn't go any better, right? If you laid it out for somebody, you couldn't have had a better experience in terms of being great at your craft, being a star athlete, making all this money. And he said he's dealt with this before, but not during a game, and then being taken to the hospital, as you said, and having tests run, checked out, so there's nothing really they can do for him, but he still doesn't know why he experiences this, right? But you're right. If guys are dealing with it in a public way, maybe it helps other people feel like it's not – they're not alone out there.
I think it's laudable that you're able to talk about it and that you're able to, and I think both guys, DeRozan as well, to be able to talk about depression. I think people go through a lot of things and hide it. I think, for whatever reason, we all feel that we've got to hide some things in our lives. And, I just think that while it is difficult to speak about some matters, I think you should always seek some help. If you have, you know, a wild thought, if you have any kind of, you know, anxiety, that sort of thing. And I think that we're, you know, and I don't know if millennials are better about it, Brian. I don't know that if people have been taught, but people of our generation are very
internalized.
Difficult.
Yes. You saw it, you know, mostly you saw your parents do it, their parents do it. It was some sort of sign of weakness if you had any kind of mental issues or you're working through, you didn't not only speak of it, you didn't address it, right? You just tried to go through it each and every day to your own detriment.
And there are, you know, you got to remember there are people on your side in life and people that want you to be okay. And if you have stuff like that, you know, if you unburden yourself, you'll find out that there's probably a support group for anything that you can imagine. There's probably somebody that's gone through it and figured out a way around it, and there's help out there for you. So I think it's laudable that both these guys are talking about mental health issues. You know, it's a good thing to do. It's not a good thing to bottle up all your feelings. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a drastic type of thing. You can, you know, if you're a student, you can go to a school counselor, you can go to your folks, man. I mean, go talk to your parents, talk to a sibling, but talk it out. I mean, I really thought it was great that he did that. I thought it was, you know, I've never had a panic attack to my knowledge, but God knows, I've heard enough stories about it to you know.
I wonder how much his teammates concerned. Were. I mean, they might have been aware of something happened during that game.
He said he was afraid to tell them.
Right. Because
he said that he felt that they wouldn't want to trust him anymore. Well, they wouldn't think that they could rely on him.
That's why I asked the question, because you know that he and LeBron have had basically a strained relationship, right? I mean, LeBron's like, oh, well, I don't want him traded or anything, but he just, it seems like if they're, before Isaiah Thomas showed up, it seemed like the default guy to blame was Kevin Love whenever anything didn't go right? I mean, just point in his direction.
Well, knock it off. Kevin needs a little space.
Now, I do draw the line at companion peacocks on airplanes and stuff like that, where, you know, the people say they have a flying, you know, fear of flying, and next thing you know, it's some exotic bird like Joe Madden had spring training camp on a plane. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, here comes the companion peacock that has to be taken off the plane. No, I got papers here. He's allowed to fly.
I don't think peacocks are what you use, but I do.
No, there has actually been incidents. You know, you get the golden retriever, you get the here comes the
like a little cat, I guess.
Yeah,
I
here comes the mini pony, the mini horse. You know, that's okay. He's got the middle seat. He won't bother you.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. I don't know anything about it.
You've seen a lot of things on planes, though, haven't you?
Yeah, you see a lot of stuff on planes. I've seen, you know, plenty of dogs on planes over the years, and don't really have a major problem with it. I mean, don't bark when I'm sleeping. That would be my only request. If anyone that's traveling with a dog, no, don't.
I like when there's three of them so we can play poker.
Yeah, I like to get the felt out there.
I take a dog or an animal over a crying baby on any flight.
Yeah,
you know what's funny? It's like when you are single and don't have children, you know, you kind of are like, you know, can you quiet your animal? But then when you have kids and you're flying and you're doing everything you can to keep the child quiet, and you see some guy give you a look because your baby is crying, you just have this, like, you know, you will listen to the angels sing and you will like it. Like, it's totally. And so I am much more sympathetic to a crying baby than I would have been before I went through that experience.
And
the longest flight I ever took was taking an 18-month-old to England and Ireland. And that is, if you ever have a terminal disease, just do that one afternoon and you'll get 6 months of life.
Yeah. If they give you a week to live, it'll seem like.
Oh, my God, that was unbelievable. That was the worst. Literally trying to quiet the kid, trying to amuse the kid, trying to keep the kid from. At one point, I tried to take her for a walk and she broke away from me and charged the cockpit. And I'm like trying to get to her, and, you know, the FBI agents on the plane or federal marshals are tackling me. And I'm like, no, it's the child. I'm exaggerating, but it was out of control. And it was just so difficult. Oh, it was really rough. And we didn't buy her a seat, which was a huge problem.
Oh.
Yeah. And the flight ended up being sold out, and it was a disaster.
Boy, that you're lucky you got on, you know, got the trip, because sometimes they're like, okay.
And you know what? I mean, I got to tell you, the 2 weeks we were gone, you know, every morning it was like, oh my God, I got to go home. Oh my God, I got to go do that again. It was, you know.
The return of the flight was always on your mind. Yeah.
I said to my wife at one point, maybe we should just relocate here and raise her here and then we'll go home. Like, we're never going to be able to get on that plane.
When she turns 18, we can get back on the plane.
Yeah. Oh, it was
Molly in a pub just, in Dublin.
God. It would have
been. What are you doing? Well, yeah. I've just got 5 more years.
I'm just waiting it out. Maybe when she's about 7,
worst
we can try again.
To be.
But a baby on a plane is a, you know, think of it. And it's funny because parents, they try very hard to not, I think. And then sometimes you get so overwrought from it that you're just like, okay. And then you stop for a second, and then everybody really stares a hole in you, you know? You're not doing anything. 312-644-6767.
Noise canceling earphones.
67, exactly. Invest in some technology, pal. Hey, you want to borrow these? Came back at the end of the flight. You're ruining the movie. Molly and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Molly and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. And that is Robin Lopez, Rolo, as we like to call him. And that was a couple weeks ago when asked about the fact that he wasn't going to play much anymore, and yeah,
feigning ignorance.
Yeah, he made a tank joke, which is good. Tankity tankity tank. I like it.
Yeah, we had a texter said Bowie Kuhn told Charlie Finley how to operate his team back in the 70s. Right, the role of commissioner and the job of commissioner has been such, it's been so redefined, because back then Bowie Kuhn, there was actually a clause in the rules that was enforced. Bowie Kuhn attempted to, as the commissioner of baseball, enforce it anyway, to the point where they went to a federal courtroom here in Chicago, that it was in the best interest of baseball, that the commissioner was only interested in whatever was in the best interest of the game. He wasn't necessarily the de facto representative of ownership at the negotiating table when they were trying to get, you know, a labor contract with the players union. So those days are over, right? So now when a commissioner does try to flex his muscles and try to do what's right, the way what he perceives to be right for the integrity of the game or the league, you had kind of look at it, at least some of us do, with like, well, wait a minute, are you worried about the game and integrity, or are you worried about maximizing the profit for your ownership? And what is the priority and what is the job description these days? And I think that's when you see him hand out $600,000 fine to Mark Cuban and then have a nice conversation with John Paxson and the Bulls and say, you know, here's what we'd like you to do if you work with us on that. You know, we'll just kind of give you a heads up that we're paying attention here. You know, where is the line? You know, why is it that one guy just blatantly comes out and tells you the best course of action is to lose games? And I told the players that, and that is met with the full fury of the commissioner's office. And then the other one just gets a, hey, you know, it'd be nice if you played the veteran guys too and not have them in street clothes.
I think it's outrageous. I think it's just crazy that the league believes it's okay to tell you who should be in your lineup. You know, hey, well, tell us, you know, how would the rotation work best? You have the analytics as much as anyone else. Why don't you go to all the teams and tell them, this is the rotation you should be using for the rest of the year. Why single us out? You know, I just think, look at how crappy some of these teams are. And you want to know who's trying to lose? Just look at some of these teams.
Yeah,
and one of them's coming in. So give me a break.
Well, two of them are playing. I mean, the Bulls are trying to do it. They're doing it more diplomatically.
They're trying to be less overt.
Right.
Which I think the league should appreciate, right?
Well, you have Adam Silver handling this way, kind of, you know, uneven attempt to it. And then you have Rob Manfred saying, you know, basically, who cares? You know,
Rob Manfred's right. Let me ask you something. What is the, Mr. Commissioner, what is the proper number of minutes to play a guy a game? Does that mean that, that you know, okay, we're going to play Robin Lopez. We're going to play him 5 minutes.
Yeah, and when? And you know, when do those 5 minutes? They have to be
2.5 in the first half, and then
does he have to be on the floor if the game's
we'll play 3 minutes in the third?
If
quarter,
the game's on the then, line, do you? Does the league say that's one of your best players?
Well,
he has to be out there.
There you go. I mean, I watched the Bulls lose to Dallas, and you sit there and you say, okay, well, why? You know, how do they possibly lose? Oh, you know what they do? They take Dirk Nowitzki out at different spots when they need to. When they need a bucket, Dirk's on the bench.
How about when the Seattle Mariners GM, Jerry DePoto, comes out and says, yeah, you have more teams this year trying to tank than trying to win a World Series. Now, that's a front office executive for Major League Baseball. If you think, you know, would that get the commissioner's attention? Hey, wouldn't you, you know, hey, easy there, Jerry, don't put that out there. Rob Manfred says, who cares? You know, it's been successful. It's worked for some teams. And if other teams want to take that blueprint and run with it, we have no issue with it. Okay, but I believe Jerry DePoto. I mean, you look at Major League Baseball, and I don't know if it's a majority, but you're approaching at least half the league, half the league's plural, are going the opposite direction, are in a full rebuild or starting a rebuild, and have no intention of winning this year or next year or maybe the year after that.
It's just insane. It's insane. I mean, you know, here's what they're doing now. They're trying to, you know, they clearly don't want it to happen, and so they fine Mark Cuban $600,000 because he talks about it. Now the idea is to sort of kind of legislate it on the fly, right? Well, you know, we have a rule here that's designed to protect teams from not playing their stars. Are you telling me that if you go into town, you go into some town, and you don't have Rolo or Holiday playing, then
people are going to be disappointed.
Oh, I want my money back. This is not LeBron sitting. This is not, you know, Tim Duncan and half the roster sitting. This is these are guys that
just,
you know,
guys.
All you got to do is say, well, you know what? We really hope that that Felicio can develop to a point where he replaces Robin. So that's what we're trying to do. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with doing that? And you know what? And this is good probably for Robin Lopez because it's the only way he's getting on the floor. But it just seems so just sort of micromanaging the league. You know, that's fine if you have established rules about tanking, but they can't make the playoffs. Why can't they worry about player development? How do you know what they're doing? It's just
shouldn't he pick up the phone and say campaign should never see a minute of NBA of NBA game action because he's just not an NBA quality player? I mean, if you're going to have that standard on one end, where you know that the veteran big guy and Robin Lopez has to play, shouldn't, when you look around, say, well, you know, campaign should be in the G League if he's lucky, so let's not play him anymore. Let's put some more higher standard out there.
Did I say that the Mavericks beat the Bulls? I know the Bulls beat the Mavs. And I think the reason the Bulls won the game in part is because as I watched the end of that game, Nowitzki would come in and out of the lineup, right, and he wasn't there to take the big shot. You know, part of stopping a run is having a player that can score and can do good things. You know, I remember talking about that game, and I said to you, I couldn't come up with a scenario in which the Bulls did not win that game. And they were not favored in the game. The Mavs were actually favored. Remember,
right.
You had the number, and I was like,
and Dallas got out to a 10-0 lead.
Yes, and they led late in the game, but there was no way the Mavericks are trying to lose. They've got the information. They've got the analytics. I mean, that's what's so damn ridiculous about the whole thing. When you're actually applying your analytics group to try to figure out the worst combination of players, that's just insane. And the idea that somehow, you know, 10 minutes of Robin Lopez will change the fate of a team, it's just nonsense.
Yeah, it's all about Lopez. We're not having this conversation. The NBA isn't saying anything if it's just Justin Holiday. And we know Felicio stinks, but the guy needs time on the court. They just gave him that bad contract. So I didn't think the Bulls were the worst of all the teams out there. I was so happy to wake up and see that Dallas actually won last night to beat Denver. That's how ridiculous this whole thing is.
The Bulls should. We have a texter who makes a great suggestion. Have everyone shoot with their left hand. You know, you have them play, but they shoot. Well, we're trying to train them to be able to be ambidextrous.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you, Joe. We appreciate it. Texter says, "What are Adam Silver's thoughts on playing Omer Asik?" We're gonna
that's
take
our Asik update for the
that's our Asik update for the day. We're bringing Big Z, and we'll talk about the transition tag on Kyle Fuller. Allen Robinson long been rumored as a guy that the Bears could go after. One of the possibilities of that. We'll pick it apart with Big Z next. Mully and Hanley on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is a football man for the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to this program, and a valued friend. Big Z!
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, pretty interesting. The Bears tagging one Kyle Fuller and guaranteeing whatever, $13 million, or are they? Because those tags are made to be used and maybe pulled, and maybe you're not guaranteed anything, and now you negotiate, and I'm sure they want the guy back, but I don't know. I'm sure they had a contract offer on the table and they were negotiating. Now they kick the can down the road a little bit, right?
Yeah, now you buy yourself some extra time and you protect your asset. The transition tag does not offer compensation if another team were to sign Kyle to an offer sheet that the Bears would then decline. The franchise tag, you get two first-round draft picks if you decline it. Well, you've seen teams put in a bind or a jam before in these situations when they use a tag on a player and then they're snug, very close to the cap, and if they're tight and they don't have a lot of wiggle room, and the other team will, you know, find a way to construct a contract that'll be difficult to impossible for the club to match. The Bears have a vast surplus of salary cap space, so another team is unlikely to be able to put together an offer sheet for Kyle that would make it prohibitive for the Bears to match. In fact, if they put together an offer sheet for Kyle that wasn't bonkers, the Bears might send him a thank you card because they did the heavy lifting for them. Kyle wants to return to the Bears, so I think... And it's never done until it's done, but I think it's a matter of when they iron something out than if. And a lot of times in these tag situations, it's a big if because the players rub the wrong way and neither side can get close to one another. And you just see a lot of these guys play out the tag and there's some acrimony. And heck, we saw it with Alshon Jeffrey a couple years ago. He had the tag and they couldn't work out a deal. Before him, Henry Melton was tagged. They could not agree on a value for a long-term contract. Forte, a deal, he was tagged. A deal got done right before the deadline in the middle of summer. And then Lance Briggs played the entire season on a tag and didn't return to the Bears until after he had entered the open market. So... The tag isn't a guarantee that a deal gets done, but I think in this case there's probably reason for optimism.
And you write in the story today in the Tribune, Brad, about, you know, you check out stats and Kyle Fuller's tied for third in passes defended last season, and you look at the guys behind, he's behind Darius Slay, 34, Chargers, Casey Hayward, 26, and then it's Kyle's 24 as well. They kept throwing to him. I mean, every game you would hear, you know, that they, you know, Prince Amukamara wasn't getting all the action. It was all going Kyle's way. How do you read that? Do you read that teams weren't buying the fact they thought they had a better opportunity to make a play in Kyle's direction? Or, I mean, when you look at the stats, it's great he defended those, and you mentioned he could have had a lot more interceptions, but there were some drops there. I just, when you look at the whole package, I still don't know if he's an elite cornerback or how you define him.
Yeah, I don't know that he's elite. To me, you can't go out there and have one season like he did and be elite. Elite to me is high level production for multiple years. So I wouldn't entertain that thought right now, but he was clearly their best cornerback last year. And how do you explain all the throws that came his way? It might have been more, I believe it was probably more a product of, you know, these offenses are right-handed. And naturally speaking, the ball's going to go that direction a little bit more than it goes the other way. It's a more comfortable throw for the quarterback. He doesn't have to turn his hips, turn his head, and look at that backside throw when Prince Mukamara was covering the backside this past season. So it was probably less, I don't think it was teams saying, hey, let's attack Kyle Fuller, at least not after, you know, the first five, six games, as much as it was. Maybe they weren't fearing throwing at him. But you look at some of the other stats, and you like, you know, he wasn't giving up touchdowns. He wasn't getting penalties. So, yeah, they were going that way. But he played really well. And if you don't bring him back, you've got almost nothing on the depth chart that's currently under contract. So I think it's the prudent move here, and we'll see if and when they get a deal done, what that looks like. Do they go with a long-term thing, or since he played at this really high level only once, is it maybe a little bit of a shorter deal? Because if it's a somewhat shorter contract, Kyle's 26, and that could put him back at the bargaining table for another big payday if he can continue to play at a very high level.
And it buys him time. It buys him the time to look through free agency, to go into the draft, to see if somebody falls to him, to see if they find somebody. And, you know, it buys him another year if he plays under the tag and they can go about their business again. You know, I think it's interesting what you said there, because they really don't, you know, they need to solve a lot of different positions. And this buys them time at a position that is a very important one. And again, they're going to need another corner or two. And we'll see how they go about filling that up. But that could change the dynamic a year from now.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, if they use a first-round draft pick on a corner and he plays really well, you're really changing the position there a little bit. But, you know, he's in the mix at least for 2018. We'll see what happens with them trying to work out a deal for him. And again, he wants to be here. And so you knock out this piece of business now with the Bears needing to do a ton of work next week. Free agency opens on Wednesday, and it's Monday at 11 a.m. when agents are then permitted to negotiate with other clubs for their clients. So things get fast and furious Monday.
The players became available. They, you know, if they're interested in the wide receiver, they can go get him, right? I mean,
they'll be available, yeah, as long as Jacksonville has exclusive negotiating rights with Allen Robinson through right. Monday at 11.
Right.
Sammy Watkins and the Rams, same deal. You believe both of those teams want to keep those players, but with no tag, they may ride it out to the open market, and if that happens, I think things got a whole lot more interesting for the Bears. You certainly got a much better class of wide receivers to look at, and that's huge, because the free agent class of wide receivers without Robinson and Watkins is bad, you know, bad, and it's unfortunate for teams that have acute needs at wide receiver, and there's a bunch of them, that there's not about four or five of those guys, but that's the way it is.
So that being the case, if the bidding war on Allen Robinson gets high, the Bears have nothing but money. How much does the torn ACL coming off that missed season come into play, if at all?
Well, yeah, and that's the question you've got to answer for yourself. And is it, you know, is it a bidding war? Can he have a market where he's getting a lucrative multi-year offer? Or is it a situation where he's not seeing the numbers that he thinks he might be worth, and he's willing to play on a one-year prove-it deal, maybe somewhat similar to what Alshon Jeffrey did a year ago? you know, that's the question. Where's the knee at with him, and how will he perform? But fortunately for Allen Robinson, the knee injury was suffered in week one, and everything he said here in the last month or two is that he's coming along just great and expects to potentially be on the field during OTAs and certainly during training camp. So you know, we've seen plenty of guys bounce back from ACLs and play just fine. So listen, if he gets to the open market a week from today, he'll have multiple teams in hot pursuit of him.
Let's be diplomatic in the way we ask this question, but looking at what's happened previously in free agency in previous years, it seems like one of the storylines a year ago is that the top guys weren't interested in the Bears, that the Bears had money and they had contract offers and they had pursuit, but they didn't land anybody with a big name that was wanted on the free agent market. Has anything changed with the change of coach? Has anything are they perceived differently? Do we know that, or do we suspect it will be the similar type thing after 4 years as a cellar dweller in the division?
Well, they better hope so. That's for sure. And I asked Pace basically that same question last week, and he said that he hopes so, while acknowledging that. And I agree with him that the vast majority of the time, the biggest factor in a player's decision in these instances is money. And are they really going to, you know, team X because of the quarterback, or is it because of what they're going to get in their bank account every Tuesday? You know, let's be real about it. So, yeah, I think they're probably in a better position just because a year ago you looked at them, if you were on the outside, and you said, well, the coach probably has to win this year. There might be major change. And you perhaps could have figured that the GM was in the boat for that as well. So now there certainly is more stability when you're looking at the top of the organization. That should benefit them a little bit. A year ago, nobody had any idea heading into free agency who would play quarterback for the Bears. Now they've got Mitch Trubisky, who's got people excited. So it'll be that should aid them. Yeah, is that going to make a huge difference? I don't know. You're going to have to come with the right offer. The value you place on the player is going to have to win. And if you have to exceed the value you place on the player a little bit, you better hope that he delivers on what you expect. You know, if Allen Robinson's out there and he's got the 49ers, who are desperate for wide receivers with Jimmy Garoppolo and a ton of cap space, and the Bears with Mitch Trubisky and a ton of cap space, both after him, that'll be really interesting to see how it plays out.
All right, Biggsy. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
All right, guys, have a great day.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs, from the Chicago Tribune. They're fine football man. We're going to bring in David Haw next, the lead sports columnist of said Chicago Tribune.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.